This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, March 24th. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us here on another beautiful spring day in Southwest Alaska. Coming up this week, Governor Bill Walker happens by. We'll get his take on the legislature's efforts to address this fiscal crisis.
There is progress. I mean, that's what we celebrate is movement and progress, and there is that. They are working hard to get things done this year.
Plus, we have Sharon Hansen of the championship Bristol Bay Lady Angels speaking about their season and last Saturday's title game.
It was super exciting and intense, and we just played our hearts out, and it was super fun.
We'll talk the upcoming herring season with manager Tim Sands, get a look at how some homeschoolers spend their time, and another area student performed at this year's statewide Poetry Out Loud competition.
We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams. Wandering by lone sea breakers and sitting by desolate streams.
Denalian junior Mariah Lawrenson, after a look back at some of this week's news. On Saturday, the Bristol Bay Lady Angels took the title in the 2A state championship game, beating the Nenana Lynx 40-34. Coach Heath Lyon praised his team's hard work through a season full of games to get them through the finish line.
Even the games, the ones we lost and the ones, you know, they were in the game. We were competing with the 3As and that stuff, and they all fought hard every game. You know, there were times we were sick, there were times they were, you know, and they fought through it.
It was the team's first championship title since 2005. New Stuyahok musher John Hansen Jr. clinched a win in a sled dog sprint race in Russian Mission last weekend. He competed against seven others in the 18-mile heats over the course of the three-day race, and it was his first time to take top honors.
I had nice runs, and dogs were performing well. Happy for my dogs, finishing strong. Yeah, my first time winning a race for how many years. You know, I've been traveling for dog races, and been coming in second place, third place, first time. Finally got to first place.
Hansen, Bristol Bay's only competitive musher this season, has been racing since January around the YK Delta. On Monday, the State House passed an operating budget calling for spending of $4.25 billion of unrestricted general funds for state services. Finance co-chair Neil Foster, a Nome Democrat, stood to defend the majority caucus budget against spirited attacks from Republicans who say that not enough spending has been cut.
I would argue that we have made substantive cuts. This budget before you is $82 million smaller than the previous year. Since 2015, when we got serious about cutting the budget, since that time we've cut over $1 billion from the operating budget. Mr. Speaker, the fat has been cut, and any further cuts are to the bone.
The Senate has said it will aim to cut another $200 to $300 million in spending from the operating budget and is unlikely to entertain the idea of an income tax proposed in the House. Dillingham's Bernina Vinois was appointed back to the city school board Monday night, seated in a vacancy left by Tanya O'Connor's resignation. Vinois was a former school board president but lost a re-election bid in 2014. Speaking Monday, she said staff retention will be one of her priorities.
I think some issues are sustaining teachers. I think we have constant turnovers, and it seems to go cycles from when I was in high school to what seems like will be happening next year. I think that that's important, having steady teachers, steady admin team.
O'Connor stepped down following a promotion in the state court system. And the Iditarod was marked as officially over when the finishers' banquet was held Sunday night in Nome. Each musher was recognized individually, beginning with this year's Red Lantern, Cindy Abbott.
2 years ago, I was still out on the trail during the banquet. And this year, I came in 32 hours faster. To still get the Red Lanterns, and I'm a pair.
Mitch Seavey won the 45th Iditarod, setting a new speed and age record for a victor. A total of 8 mushers scratched from this year's race, which was rerouted again for a Fairbanks start. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger. Alaska Governor Bill Walker has been out in front of Alaska's fiscal crisis for 2 years, calling on the legislature to reform the state's budget and look for new revenues. Last year, when they failed to pass legislation to restructure the permanent fund, Walker vetoed half of Alaskans' PFD checks on his own, a controversial move he said had to be done. He was in town for some meet and greets Wednesday and stopped by our studios to talk more. Governor Walker, good to have you in the program, and good to have you in town.
It's great to be back.
What's your message around town today?
Well, it's a couple of things. A message that a positive message that we are fixing Alaska in Juneau. Speaker Edgeman is doing a great job. I enjoy immensely working with him, and I saw him yesterday. He was quite envious that I'm here today, and he's not able to be here at the same time. So I think we're getting the job done in Juneau, and we need to do it this year.
Let me ask you about that. The House passed its version of an operating budget. It looks a little bit closer to what you proposed than the Senate's likely to put forward. Senate's put forward a permanent fund restructuring bill. Pieces of what you proposed last year, not the whole deal, but what's your sense of the progress?
Well, there is progress. I mean, that's what we celebrate is movement and progress, and there is that. They are working hard to get things done this year. You know, one thing about politics, you don't get everything you want and or the way you want it. So you have to sort of realize that it won't come back exactly how you put it in the hopper, and which is nothing wrong with that. That's what the process is designed to do. So.
Speaker Edgeman was here for a constituent meeting on Saturday, and one thing he said, I would like to see the governor get out in front and help us close a deal here. Is that something you plan to do in the next?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, last year we took the field first, and a lot of the focus was on us, and nothing really moved down the field. And this year we put instead of putting 9 pieces out on the table, we put 2, and those 2 are moving along fine. And so now it's time for us to weigh in. I meet with him on a weekly basis, so it's time for us to weigh in now that they've gotten as far as they've gotten, and I applaud their success thus far, and let's close the deal.
From the cheap seats, it looks like they're getting further than they were last year. It looks like the election sent them on a course to make some changes here.
Right. I think that I think that's absolutely correct. We're not facing an election. We need to get it done this year. Whatever we don't get done this year, I don't think it'll happen next year.
All right. Let me reflect a few local questions to you, Governor. One would be, I hear from stakeholders that as some costs get pushed down from the state, PERS and TERS, school bond reimbursement, things like that, that the state is not always looking to help the cities or municipalities deal with those. A couple examples would be Dillingham Landfill can no longer open burn because of air quality regulations. We know those are a mix of federal and state, but that costs the city a lot of money. Your Department of Community and Regional Affairs recommended against Manicotic and Dillingham looking to collect a fish tax to pay for some of these kind of things. Is the left hand talking to the right when we go forward?
Sometimes. Sometimes they're not. And that's part of what my job is, just to find out when that's not happening and make sure that there is some coordination there on those. I have said that painfully that deficits roll downhill to the local governments, and that's why we need to fix it and not just shove the issue off on local governments, because many times local governments are sort of at the limit of what they can do. They don't have the broad-based opportunities that we do as a state, and so I'm saying let's fix it in Juneau.
Another question I imagine you're going to hear around town today is the Pebble Mine is likely to move forward, at least more than it has for a couple of years. It looks like they may have a clearer path from the federal side, perhaps, and some folks here would like to see something from the state either to help put the brakes on or something. Is that something your administration or DNR is looking at? What's your sense of the Pebble Mine?
We are, and because there's a permit timing coming up at the end of this month that I'm in frequent communication and meetings with the commissioner of DNR, Andy Mack, about that issue, looking at the various different options and taking into consideration what we've heard from this area, from individuals, from organizations that are concerned about certain things, making sure that's taken into consideration. So we used to have what's called the Coastal Zone Management process that provided for a lot of public input. That went away in 2011, but philosophically, I'm where they were, and so we're trying to get as much local input as we can, even though the technical process is not in place. The thought process is still there as far as seeking local input on these decisions.
Even so, with the environmental concerns there, what about the idea that Pebbles says they'll have jobs and some revenue to put forward into the coffers?
You know, obviously, you know, we don't necessarily take that in consideration from the regulatory standpoint. I do as a governor, but not necessarily from the regulatory standpoint. That's something that's important, but, you know, also I want to make sure that, you know, we have a non-renewable resource and a renewable resource. And I have said consistently that the renewable resource of the fish needs to be thoroughly protected, whatnot. So it's not an equal balance necessarily. We look at both, but again, it's the renewable resource. They create a lot of jobs year after year after year after year. So,
any thoughts on your reelection, sir?
You know, with where we are right now, with the decisions we're having to make, what's going on in Juneau, we don't spend any time looking at that. We haven't dodged the question. You know, we'll probably do it the same we did before. I enjoy working with Byron Mallott immensely. You know, after we joined our campaign, the first place we came to was Dillingham, and so it has some special meaning to both of us of how we sort of started our campaign. It was really here in Dillingham.
Bill Walker is Alaska's governor. Governor Walker, it's good to have you back at Dillingham, and thanks for making time for our program.
My pleasure. It's always good to be back, and I look forward to my next trip.
Those Lady Angels, what can you say? Big congrats to coaches Heath Lyon and Danica Wilson and their squad of nine for bringing the trophy back to the Bay. Carl Pulliam with Small Schools Broadcasting kept a close eye on all the action through the tournament and had the call during the title game against Nenana. He joins me now for more. Let me ask you, in your opinion, what set the Bristol Bay Lady Angels apart from the pack there?
Well, you know, Dave, I think I always believe defense wins ball games, and while they outscored their opponents in each game, it was defense that was the key. Moorcroft, Sharon Hansen, Anna Hansen, Riley, Rachel had come in there too, a sophomore, doing a good job filling in. So, I mean, it was really a total team defense, but some real defensive stalwarts, like in the Hansen girls, especially Sharon.
It seems like, having watched them play a few times this season, it seems like they gel as a team and a little bit more focus on supporting each other through picks and grabbing rebounds and the hustle and all that kind of thing. I didn't get to watch the tournament out here, but we listened to you call it. What translated during the games last weekend?
Well, I think a key player for me, again, thinking of Moorcroft and Allie, there a couple times, I don't think she even took a shot. If she did, she might take a one shot in the Glen Allen game, maybe one in the other one leading up to that, or the first one, I think it was. But, you know, and even at Regions, the same way. She doesn't look for the shot, but she comes up with a hand on a ball, a tip shot, you know, just makes all these other plays and doesn't seem to be worried whether or not she scores. And yet in the championship game, I think she hit 2 3-pointers. So there you go, you know. It doesn't matter who scores, and the team understands what needs to be done to win ball games, and they proved it once again. Nenana was closing in that championship game, and they shut them down with their defense. Nenana did not score in the last 90 seconds and had plenty of opportunities to try to, but couldn't get around the Angels.
One of the key players through the tournament, especially the last two games, the semifinal and the championship game, was sophomore Sharon Hansen.
It's hard to, when you were to say, let's pick the most valuable player for the tournament, and I think the way she played in the Glen Allen game, some of the girls kind of, it seemed like they were struggling in that game. And Glen Allen plays a good style of defense, and they had two players that played on a state championship team, so they knew what to do. And Sharon was the one that seemed to pop up at every spot where it's like, oh, Glen Allen might, you know, they could close the gap here with this. Oh, Sharon Hansen with a steal. Or Sharon, you know, pokes the ball free. Or she makes a defensive play of some kind. Or gets a rebound in a 3-on-1 of them. I think it was a 3-on-1, and she was the one. And she was just outstanding. I thought she was the most valuable player at the tournament for me, for the Angels, if you had to pick one person.
Carl Pulliam with Small Schools Broadcasting had the call for much of the tournament for many of the games. And thanks for this analysis, Carl. We'll look forward to having you again next March.
Oh, I hope so too. I love small schools basketball, rural Alaska basketball. That's where it's at, folks. Forget the NBA. All right, Dave, thanks.
And speaking of Sharon Hansen, we have that sophomore here with us for her take. It's very good to have you in the studio. Thanks for making time this week, and a big congratulations to you and the Bristol Bay Lady Angels.
Thank you.
Take me back to last Saturday. How did that game feel against Nenana after last year's very close run for the championship? Tell me about Saturday.
It was super exciting and intense, and we just played our hearts out, and it was super fun.
So you started the season in the Rally the Regions and looked great there. Finished number one, beat some last year's rivals, and that gave the team, I think, a little bit of added confidence going forward, but there was no resting on laurels of that opening tournament. It was hard work the whole way through.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, it was one of our first tournaments of the season, and we just worked hard and in practices, and we gave it all we had, and we had fun.
So people who have gotten the chance to watch the Lady Angels this year, well, in fact, for the last several years, have noticed that there's some elements about the team that set you apart that I think led to your title this season. There's a lot of teamwork. There's a lot of hustle. There's a lot of focusing on those core basic elements of the game, like setting picks and grabbing rebounds and making crisp passes. It seems like you all are there to play as a team. We don't have your other eight members. We just have you here today speaking on their behalf. But you did lead in scoring, but I think that's not as important to you guys as playing like a team.
Yeah, we just had a lot of teamwork, as you said, and we have just different skills that we use, and we use them together and keep building up, and we just used them and had fun.
Tell me about Coach Lyon and Coach Wilson.
They were super supportive, and they were there the whole season, and they just had lots of confidence in us, and they just pushed us to be our best.
What do they focus on at practice and things like that? What's Coach Lyon's big thing, if those of us got to dip in and listen to a practice? Is he yelling and screaming? Is he encouraging? What kind of things is he about?
He doesn't yell or scream, but he just encourages, and if he, like, ever gives us a new play, he always asks us if we understood it and if we got through with it, and yeah.
So you had some good seniors on the team, some leadership. Tell me about them.
Yeah, we had two seniors, Anna and Riley, and
this is your sister Anna Hansen, and
yeah.
Riley Lyon, Coach Lyon's daughter.
They were two of the most skilled players on our team, and I was really thankful to have them there with me, and I was sad to see them leave.
Well, aside from those two, there's you were a squad of nine, and a lot of the scoring was done by four or five members of the team, but everybody played a big role, and it will be interesting to see what happens next year. Only losing two, even the two very good players, but what do you think about next season?
Yeah, a bunch of girls are going to have to, like, step up their game, and we're going to have to fill the shoes of the two off-going seniors, and I just think that we can do it.
Will Coach Lyon stick around?
I think he's going to, yeah. I'm not totally sure, but I think he will.
Well, we'll be interested to see that, and just a big congratulations to you guys. The whole region's proud of your team, and you guys had a wonderful season the whole way through. And finished strong there with a 2A title. Sharon Hansen, so good to have you in the studios, and congratulations.
Thank you.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond. Thanks for staying with us this week. Monday morning on the average school day finds most students in their seat in a classroom. But for the Bailey family in Dillingham, the classroom can be anywhere from the kitchen table to the Nooshigak Peninsula hunting caribou. KDLG's Avery Lill has more on one alternative to traditional public school.
And then the moon, like to a silver bow, new bent in heaven, shall behold the night of our Solomontes.
Go, Philostrate, stir up Antonine.
Keep going.
Joseph and Esther Bailey are in 9th and 11th grade. Siblings and classmates, they're reading Midsummer Night's Dream together for their literature class. They're students of the Galena City School District, but they've never actually been to school there. They've never actually been to any brick-and-mortar public or private school. They're homeschoolers enrolled in the Interior Distance Education of Alaska, or IDEA. In age and grade, the five siblings cover almost the entire gamut of grades. From the youngest...
I'm six and my name is Natalie. I'm in first grade.
To the oldest...
Isaac, 12th grade.
Their primary educator and mother, Shanna, explains what a regular day looks like for them.
So usually I get up in the earlier morning and then my husband gets up and goes to work. And I usually wait for a little bit to get the kids up because it's kind of my quiet time. And then I usually get the kids up. Like I said, we don't get up early at all. So usually I'll try to get them up around 10, you know, and then they get breakfast and they're kind of slow getting started. And then we get busy on some schoolwork, but it's pretty much just the younger kids that start that way because my older kids, they like to do it later in the day, you know, in the evenings. And so the younger two, I try to keep a little bit more scheduled.
Ethan is in the fifth grade. True to stereotype, he's still in his pajamas in the mid-afternoon. He says that the flexible schedule is what he enjoys about homeschooling.
I don't really have one. I kind of just do it whenever, unless my mom tells me to, then I have to do it. Yesterday, I got up and I did some homework, and then about 2 hours later, I did the rest of my homework. I had to do history, and I was cuddled up by a little nightlight until 1 a.m.
The Baileys moved to Alaska from California 2 years ago. For the first time, the middle three students are enrolled in the IDEA program. But Shanna Bailey says that they've been homeschooled from the beginning.
My husband was homeschooled, and it was just kind of one of those values we always decided we would like our kids to be, you know, involved in. And just that way we had more control over, you know, what they were being taught.
In large part, she says, their Christian faith influences their perspective on science and history, and it's a priority for them to incorporate that into their children's academics. The Baileys' reasons for homeschooling through IDEA are pretty common, says director Daryl Bowers.
Typically, families come to us for one of two reasons. Number one is they knew since their children were born that they were going to homeschool them. Oftentimes, these are families that were mom and dad or one of the two parents were homeschooled themselves. The other type of family that comes to us is a family that, you know, maybe had a negative experience or they feel that they can better educate their kids at home. So they choose to remove their kid from the public school.
Bowers says that the IDEA program is the first of its kind in the state, a distance learning school within the public school system open to students all over the state. Since it opened 20 years ago, he says, a number of other such programs have started, but IDEA remains the largest with 4,060 students enrolled this year. 14 of those are in Dillingham, 5 are in Naknek. Usually, though, Bowers says that IDEA doesn't market itself to rural villages because they don't want to draw students away from schools that might face closure as student populations dwindle. Bowers says that schools around the state didn't receive students' English language arts, mathematics, and science scores due to technical errors, but when the school last received standards-based assessments, IDEA students' scores were comparable with those of students at public schools around the state.
During the time of the SBAs, our reading scores typically were ahead of the state average, and our math scores were slightly lower than the state average.
Bowers says graduation rates are similar as well. For rural Alaskans, Bowers says flexibility that allows families to participate in seasonal activities like hunting, fishing, and trapping can be a draw. That's a sentiment echoed by the Bailey family. Isaac, a senior, went hunting with his dad this week. When he got back, he wrote up a report on the economics of caribou hunting.
If you like your meat quality to be higher, then it's a lot better to go hunt it. If you don't, you could usually get it and for less price if you don't care about the quality of the meat, whereas we do because we do a lot of baking and cooking and other things like that. So hunting it is a lot better than it would be to buy it on the market.
Economic sense was another reason that the Baileys decided to enroll in IDEA. Since it's a public school, it receives state funds for students, which it allocates to families. $1,800 for students in kindergarten through third grade, $2,000 for students in fourth through eighth grade, and $2,400 for high school students. That money can be spent on books, school supplies, field trips, and even on guided instruction, like music classes or swim lessons. The reasons for homeschooling differ from family to family and student to student, but Esther Bailey sums up the reason she and her family have enjoyed homeschooling.
The free time. Like, our neighbors, they have to go to school for 8 hours each day. I don't know, that just seems like a waste of time to me when you're still learning and you don't have to do as much.
In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
This week I asked ADF&G Bristol Bay Westside Area Manager Tim Sands to join us to talk about Togiak herring, mostly on account of how early last year's run showed up. He did join us Wednesday, but pointed out that the current estimate is for a May fishery. Because of that, because we're running low on time this week, we'll hold his early season analysis for next week. Don't miss that show on Friday. In place of that, we'd like to introduce you to Port Allsworth Jr., Mariah Lawrenson. She was one of 10 who competed in this year's statewide Poetry Out Loud competition in Juneau on March 7th. Mariah, good to talk to you up there in Tenalian today. What got you interested in this?
Well, the first thing that got me interested was my teacher. She kind of forced all of us students to participate in it on like a school level.
And this teacher, by the way, is this Miss Metzger?
Yes, it is.
And that's Nicole Metzger?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got to give a shout-out to her for keeping you guys active up there. So go ahead. So once after being forced to do it, then what did you like about it?
I really like a lot of music, and the poetry really reminded me of that. It's basically like song lyrics. So I really liked just learning about it and learning about the meanings of it and the art form.
Getting up there on stage in front of that audience there, knowing that you're on TV as well, tell me about that.
Oh, it's pretty nerve-wracking. It really makes like you can hear your heart pounding in your ears, but it's so much fun. And that kind of adrenaline makes the performance even better if you can just be like, oh, I just got to get through it and use that to be happy and excited rather than like shut off.
Very impressive. It's just very impressive to watch you high schoolers do that so well that gather there from around the state. So you had the chance to deliver three poems. Tell me about round one.
The first poem I did is called Personal by Tony Hoagland, and it is kind of about a person who is trying to experience life, it seems like, and wanting to get the most out of it, but feeling like they're not like capable to be out there and in the world and be doing stuff. I thought it was really good.
Personal by Tony Hoagland. Don't take it personal, they said. But I did. I took it all quite personal. The breeze and the river and the color of the fields, the price of grapefruit and stamps, the wet hair of women in the rain. And I cursed what hurt me, and I praised what gave me joy. The most simple-minded of possible responses. The government reminded me of my father, with its deafness and its laws, and the weather reminded me of my mom, with her tropical squalls. Enjoy it while you can, they said of happiness. Think first, they said of talk. Get over it, they said at the School of Broken Hearts. But I couldn't, and I didn't, and I don't believe in the clean break. I believe in the compound fracture served with a sauce of dirty regret. I believe in saying it all and taking it back and saying it again for good measure while the air fills with I'm sorries. Like wheeling birds and the trees look seasick in the wind. Oh, life! Can you blame me for making a scene? You were that yellow caboose, the moon disappearing over the ridge of a cloud. I was the dog chained in some fool's backyard, barking and barking, trying to convince everything else to take it personal, too.
So So that was personal. So it comes to round three. And now this poem will catch everybody's ear because it has a reference in a very popular movie from probably the 60s. Mm-hmm. But tell me about number three, why you picked it, and what it's about.
Poem number three was called Ode by Arthur O'Shaughnessy. And that is one of my favorite poems. I actually first heard it from the movie Charlie and the Chocolate Factory because
yes,
there's a reference
course.
In it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked it because to me it kind of talks about the role that musicians or artists play in society, where there are people who are like conquestors and the kings and the government and all the cool stuff that they do, but there's also this influence from people who make things for the world and who entertain them and how they can influence people and make things too. And I thought it was pretty cool.
Let's take a listen there.
Ode by Arthur O'Shaughnessy. We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams. Wandering by lone sea breakers and sitting by desolate streams, world losers and world forsakers, on whom the pale moon gleams. Yet we are the movers and the shakers of the world forever, it seems. With wonderful deathless ditties, we built up the world's great cities, and out of a fabulous story, fashion an empire's glory. One man, with a dream at pleasure, shall go forth and conquer a crown, and three, with a new song's measure, can trample an empire down. We, in the ages lying, in the buried past of the earth, built Nineveh with our sighing, and Babel itself with our mirth, and o'erthrew 'em with prophesying to the old of the new world's worth. For each age is a dream that is dying, or one that is coming to birth.
That was Arthur O'Shaughnessy's Ode, read by Mariah Lawrenson, a Tenalian junior at the Poetry Out Loud competition in Juneau. Mariah, congratulations to you for participating. Are you going to do it again next year?
I'm thinking about it. It was a really good experience, and I would definitely be happy to do it again.
Well, thanks so much for sharing a little bit about what you did, and congratulations again to you and your school for doing such a great job representing the region with these kind of things.
Thank you.
And that's it for this week's show. You can find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at our website, kdlg.org. Feedback, story ideas, songs, photos, and more, you can email them to me at dave@kdlg.org. I'm Dave Benninger. My thanks to Lawrence Hamilton and Avery Lill for their help this week. Enjoy yourselves out there. Hope to see you back next Friday.